Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. I'm J. Marie Schaefer.
And good morning. I'm Kim Hance.
And we work at the Herzog Law Firm. And welcome to our Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we answer your questions about elder law, Medicaid, wills, trusts, probate, guardianship.
And general aging questions.
And general aging questions, that's right. And we love to take your calls. So if you want to call in with a question, you can call 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. So, Kim, you had a little delay on your way in to the radio this morning.
Can't make this stuff up. Yep. I was coming down the road, and there were a bunch of cows standing in the middle of the of the road, so a lot of us had to stop and corral them back. I guess the fence had turned off or something because of flooding or whatever, but they're all safely back where they belonged. But I was a little concerned I was going to be late.
Okay, good. So no cows were injured on your way here?
No cows or humans or any other thing was injured, you're right. What's that disclaimer they put at the in the movies?
That's right.
No animals were harmed right. In the making of this film, so.
That's what we were looking for.
So nothing happened on your way in, which is good.
Yeah, no, it is good.
That was good.
Kind of, lots of people I know have been having accidents and have had really, I mean, good luck, but bad luck. Luckily not being hurt, but this winter, with the ice, I guess it, you know, we had all that great snow and now the ice really has put a bit of a damper on things.
So that kind of brings me to a story that Harry gave me that he wanted us to talk about, and talks about elderly people and driving. Mm. And as you may know, last week, Prince Philip, the Queen's husband, was involved in a car crash.
Actually, I didn't know that, but.
Okay, so he is 97 years old.
Wow.
And he was driving his Range Rover, and he pulled out into the road, and he crashed into another car. He was fine. There were two ladies in the other car. One suffered scrapes, one suffered a broken wrist. So that led to a lot of questions in Britain about whether he should still be driving, and in general about whether the elderly should still be driving. And that's always a tough conversation to have with elderly parents. And so I know... this article says that this is probably one of the worst conversations, and that children would rather talk to their parents about the funeral plans or estate planning or anything else rather than taking away the keys for driving.
Well, because it's, I mean, you know, what is driving, right? It's the ultimate sign of independence.
Right.
And once you lose the ability to get in the car and drive yourself somewhere... you become completely reliant on someone else. I think the other issue, too, is that from a physician's perspective, they tend to really not want to get involved because it's, you know, it's that question of who are they to decide whether or not somebody has the capacity to drive. Luckily, there are lots of resources out there.
Right. So what would you do if you wanted to help your parents see whether they should still be driving? Because it's interesting, DMV doesn't require you to take another driving test as you age.
Right. They don't. No. Right. There's no, like, age at which they say, you can't do this anymore. Right. You know, there are lots of things that we can do. Locally, there's a great program offered through Sunnyview that is actually part of the rehab department. And they will take someone out. They'll do first kind of a cognitive test, if you will, by having a conversation, talking to them about what rules they know about the road and things like that. And then they'll actually take them out on a driving test to see how they do. A lot of times what I say to families, it's a little unfair to do that because... A, it's at Ellis Hospital, so at Sunnyview, and that's a really confusing area in Schenectady, in my opinion.
It is.
There's some weird intersections. You're driving in an unfamiliar place. So generally, a lot of times as people age, they're capable, they just go to the grocery store and back, or they're going to Stewart's or back. So one of the things that's really great, there are a couple of local organizations that this is their specialty. They're occupational therapists or have gone through special training, and they'll drive with the person in their car to the places that they mm-hmm. frequent the most. And for
well,
a lot of
great,
famous...
because most people know how, like you said, to go to the grocery store and back.
Right.
And they know that they won't venture further than that.
Correct.
And that's what they'll limit themselves to.
Right. So you really have to look at the circumstances. You really have to look at where they're going. And there is a point where you do have to have the conversation. And the other thing where I tell kids when they say, oh, it's just they can't do it anymore. You know, look at the car. If the car's got some dings and scratches, it's
right.
probably a pretty good indication that it's time to definitely have the conversation. You know, there are lots of times where you can just get in the car and drive with them and see how they do. As we get older, our reaction times mm-hmm. slow down. No matter what it is you're doing, whether it's going up the stairs, whether, I mean, I feel like these days I've been walking like a granny because I'm so afraid of falling on the ice, right?
Right. So I think we knew when Michael's grandfather needed to stop driving. So he lived in Florida. Mm-hmm. So as you know, there's a lot of strip malls there.
Okay.
So he could go from his development to the restaurant that was about 3 blocks away by driving through the parking lots. He never went on the street.
Okay.
And I think that was his way of adapting because he knew it wasn't quite safe for him to drive anymore.
Oh, wow.
So when we drove to him and he only went through the parking lots, that's when we called my husband's mother and said, look, you need to talk to him. This isn't really safe.
Yeah, no, that's very, and that's why I say a lot of times, get in the car with them and just, mm-hmm. I mean, it might be the most terrifying, you know, 10 minutes of your life, but it will give you a good indication of really what, you know, what is happening and reaction times and mm-hmm. do they really know where they're going? I mean, because that's the other thing that we have to think about as folks, even with dementia, Alzheimer's, the concern about them getting lost. And the inability yes. to use strategies, you know, like a GPS because it's just too confusing for them to process. So you really do have to start thinking about that. And it's good to make plans. I'm working with a woman right now who's early onset, lives in Boston Lake. And one of the conversations we're having is as much as she'd like to stay at home, as her disease progresses, she will become more and more isolated because Boston Lake is a community that's fairly rural. There's not a lot close by. And right now she relies on her car to go everywhere. I mean, she's very active at the senior center. She volunteers. She visits friends, goes to the Y in Scotia Glenville. But obviously as her disease progresses, she, you know, and now she can't even go to new places, right? But she can go to her old reliables that are kind right. of locked in that long-term memory. So one of the conversations that we're having is how do you want to stay connected as this disease progresses and that ability for you to take yourself places is no longer an option, you know?
Right. So that's a great point. And so one of the things you could look at is can she hire people to drive her to places?
Right.
And that's part of getting her help. Because trying to remain as independent as long as possible, most people prefer to be in their house and what they know.
Yep.
So maybe getting in help to drive her to the community center every day or something like that would be helpful to her.
Yeah. Yeah, that and, you know, it's just looking at, you know, maybe it's time to look at some place that's more centrally located. I mean, mm-hmm. it could be making a move so that it makes things much more central to where she's going to be. And that opens up many other doors. Some of the other things that, you know, in having conversations with kids about driving is when we had a gentleman that worked, this has been about 10 years ago, just was not safe. And his doctor refused to do anything. So we actually contacted the local sheriff and let them know that we were concerned that there was a safety issue. So the sheriff actually parked outside the house one day and followed him mm-hmm. and they, you know, kind of went about it that way. So it kind of removed the family from being the one mm-hmm. that was saying you need to stop. The other thing sometimes you can do too, depending on the DMV, is you can go to the DMV and say, we're really concerned about this. Can you please call them in for a test, for a driving test? Mm-hmm. And some DMVs will send a note saying, you know, it's been X amount of years, in order to renew your license, you need to come in and do a driving test. And then it's kind of putting it in the lap of the DMV to
yeah, it's more,
you know,
helpful if
revoke
it's not,
the license right. as opposed to family doing it. So
Absolutely. So there's lots of things you can do. And so that's part of the work we do, trying to keep people independent as long as possible. Right. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, about how you can stay at home and receive care. But before we get to that, I just want to say we have seminars coming up in February. We're going to be talking about estate planning and Medicaid planning. So you can learn some of the basics about wills and trusts and how to plan for Medicaid. And those seminars will be Tuesday, February 12th at 2 o'clock at the Glenn Sanders Mansion. Wednesday, February 13th at 10 o'clock at the Holiday Inn Express in East Greenbush. And at 2 in the afternoon on February 13th at the Hampton Inn in Clifton Park. And then a special Valentine's Day seminar on February 14th at 2 o'clock at the Queensberry Hotel in Glens Falls. And I am trying to convince David to hand out some candy at that seminar, so we'll see how that
goes.
So
it'll be special.
That's
well,
right.
That or the, they always provide nice snacks, too, so maybe they'll do special Valentine's snacks for
that's right.
For our participants.
They know. Do. And we would love to have your call, so you can give us a call at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. Do you have a family member that you're concerned about that is becoming less independent? Do you want to know how to keep them at home with help? So as we've often talked about, community Medicaid is the way to keep people home.
It is. It is a great way to keep people home. But it takes some planning, right?
It does.
This is the day-old conversation. I mean, I think one of the things for that I can't stress enough for people is, as much as this isn't pretty and aging is not always pretty, the importance of planning ahead and really having conversations with your loved ones is so important, because there will become a day where there's an event, or, you know, folks realize that I just can't do this by myself anymore. And, you know, Medicaid is a wonderful program. Community services are really great, but we have to plan for them. They're not something that happen overnight.
That's right. And we have a call. We have Barbara in Grafton. Good morning.
Good morning. I have, my mother-in-law is 96, and back in 2000, we started setting up everything for, changed over the property to the three children with her right to live there.
Right.
And now, this past year, she qualified for Medicaid, and she is now in a nursing home. My question is, she doesn't have enough money to keep the house going, and there's nobody in the house, and we'd like to sell it, but does she, if we sell it, does she get a portion of that sale?
So it depends, but probably it sounds to me like she did a deed to the children with a retained life estate. Do you know, does that sound familiar?
Yes.
Okay. So when you do a deed with the life estate, you are correct. When you sell the property, there's a division of the proceeds, and part of it is allocated to your mom because she has a life estate, and part of it is allocated to the children. And the way they allocate that is they look at tables and they see what the value of her life estate is based on her age. And one good thing about this is that because she is 96 years old, the value of her life estate is going to be rather small. So yes, she will get a portion of the proceeds when you do sell the house. But depending on the sale price and that number from the table, it may not be that much.
Okay. And so that amount of money probably has to go to Medicaid?
It probably does. I mean, she can keep up to about $15,000 in her own name. So depending on what she already has in her own name, this could add to that. But anything over $15,000 would have to be paid to the nursing home.
Okay. All right. That's very helpful.
Okay. And if you do want to find out that number, you can give our office a call, 518-465-7581, and we can look at those tables for you and tell you what that percentage would be to use.
Great. Thank you.
Okay,
that
great.
Gives me a lot to go with now.
Good. Happy to help.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Thanks, you too.
Yeah, so that's a good question. Lots of people have done deeds with life estates. It's pretty common to do. I mean, there's two ways to protect your house. You can do a deed with the life estate, and you can do a deed into a trust. And there are some pros and cons to both. And this is actually one of the cons to doing the deed with the life estate.
Right.
Because if you do sell it, you do have to split the proceeds.
Right.
So you are getting some cash back. But depending on when you sell that and your age, it may be a lot of money and maybe a little bit of money. But you don't know that when you do the deed, when you are going to sell that in the future.
And then what happens if, oh, we have another call. This is Jerry in Clifton Park. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, good morning. I've been listening to your lively conversation on the elderly and driving.
Yes.
And I went through this very circumstance with my dad.
Yes.
A number of years ago. And what I did was I put him in the car with me, and we drove to very familiar places.
Mm-hmm.
And I had him read signs, and he couldn't do any of it.
Right.
And so I proved to him that his driving days were over, and he agreed.
Well, that's great that he agreed with that, right?
Right.
He agreed that he couldn't drive anymore. And so that was, you know, so I made him take the keys out of his own hand.
Well, that's good that he was receptive to that. Not everyone is, but that he was willing to go with you and then see, oh, maybe I'm not as good as I think I am. And that's maybe because of the great relationship you have with him, that you're able to talk about that and get him to realize that.
Yeah, we were firemen together, and, you know, we did a lot of stuff together. So, yeah, I got along with him really well.
Mm-hmm.
And he listened to me.
That's really good.
That is good, because it's not so often the case. You know, sometimes it causes more pushback than it does acceptance. So, so that's good.
Very.
You know?
It was a very hard thing to do.
I'm sure, right? Because, you know, the other things that I tell kids and family members is you need to have, not only when you're taking away something, you need to have something that you can replace it with, right? So you need to have a plan as to how they're going to continue to access all of the services that they want to continue, whether it's doctor's appointments, you know, grocery store, like you said, you know, visiting friends, things like that. So a lot of times it's important to do that research beforehand to say, I understand this is going to be hard, but here are all of these resources that are available that will allow you to continue, you know, attending and doing all of the activities that you're used to doing.
Yeah. Well, shortly after this little trip completed, I took him to the fireman's home up in Hudson, New York.
Okay.
And that's where he lived out his years.
Right. Good.
That's good. That's a really great place. Okay, well, thank you for calling. We'd love to hear your calls. If anyone else has a call, please give us a call at 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. We're happy to answer your questions. If you have a more in-depth question, you can always call our office and schedule either a phone call or an appointment with one of our attorneys. And our office number is 518-465-7581. And you can ask to speak to Stacy, who is the master scheduler.
Right.
She keeps us all scheduled and on time.
It amazes me all the time because I got stuck this past weekend traveling and had an appointment scheduled on Monday. And she's like immediately on it.
That's great.
Monday morning texted me saying, what would you like for me to do with this appointment? I was like, you know, still kind of foggy from the fact that I wasn't able to make my original travel plan. So that's what I said to her. I'm like, it's amazing that you can keep track of all of us.
she really does. And even the clients too. I had a client who, was it this week? Yeah, the weather was going to be that freezing sleet rains and they didn't want to drive. So yeah, she's right on that and moves it around to a better time.
Right. So,
and we have another caller. We have Mike in Clarbrook.
Good morning. Listen, I just wanted to add my two cents about the whole situation of older people and driving.
Yes.
If you are persistent, DMV will send an agent out to retest your parent.
Mm-hmm.
I had to write a number of letters.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be very well composed and citing my concerns about my dad driving. But they did send out an agent. He took out my dad. You know, we've all got our DMV stories of horror, but this was probably the most humane and human young man that they could have sent out. And he was visually upset at having to take my dad's license and cut it in half.
Oh, wow.
Oh. That's really great.
And, of course, we had to work everything out with my dad afterwards about transport and everything. But my dad actually took it well because he had had a fender bender. That was that was my whole thing, that he had had a fender bender. And
an ex-race car driver,
he was a car guy from day one. That generation, the car was their computer.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That's right.
It was their independence. It was their will.
Mm-hmm. So it's essential to them. But it is really helpful, like you did, to have that call come from an official, you know, not you, right? So that is really great that DMV did that for you, and that's...
But it did take some persistence on my part.
It does, because a lot of times, you know, like we said, they don't want to get involved, but, you know, it does take some, you know, calls and, like you said, letters, and really just saying, do you really want this person out on the road doing those things? I mean, because I'm even thinking this morning, if, you know, somebody older whose reaction time wasn't as good with a bunch of cows in the middle of the road, like, what really could have happened? You know, we hear about accidents happening all the time where, you know, they hit the gas instead of the brake, or, you know, just, right. So kudos to you for avoiding a potential future tragedy.
And thank you for that tip. That is something that I'm sure is helpful to our listeners.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay, thank you.
Alrighty.
Thanks, have a good day.
Okay. So, big topic of interest to people, because that's probably a very common thing you have to face when you're trying to help take care of your parents in their home.
Well, it's always part of that planning, too. I mean, you know, we deal with clients all the time that kind of don't have these ahead of time conversations, and they're not aware of all of the services and things that are out there. I mean, you and I were just working with a fairly new client, but whose dad is being sent to a nursing home who really doesn't belong there.
Right. I was going to talk to you about that. So in this process, so he went into the hospital. And the son, who lives in California, is trying to work with a discharge planner from a distance. And they're telling him, of course, you know, a nursing home placement because it's easier for them to do that. So that's where I brought Kim in, and tell us how you can help by talking to, you know, seeing the dad, talking to the discharge planner, and assessing kind of what his options are.
Right. I mean, we're at a time right now where the options for living arrangements are enormous, whether it's home care, whether it's assisted living, whether it's nursing home. And one of the things that we're not always aware of are what are those choices and what are the qualifications for those things. And, you know, we've had a couple of cases as of late, whether it's been a hospitalization, and they're just basically what they're doing is they send out paperwork to all of the area nursing homes to see who's willing to pick the person up, and not really do diligence for a good discharge plan. They just need to get them out of the hospital. And it's insurance driven, so I do understand, I do get it.
So that means, so if you're in the hospital and suddenly the hospital decides you don't need to be there anymore, that means that the insurance is not going to pay for you to be there anymore.
Correct.
So now they're looking to try and get you out quickly. Otherwise, you could have to private pay for being in the hospital.
Right.
And that's very expensive.
Very expensive. Dealing with that right now with a couple, $2,000 a day is what they were charging for the wife to be there on a what they call a social admit. Husband was medically needed to be there. Wife has, you know, moderate stage Alzheimer's, and they didn't feel she was safe to be home alone, so they admitted her to, not really thoroughly explaining to the family what the implications of that were. So $2,000, she was there 14 days. That adds up pretty quickly.
That's very expensive, and there are certainly other options had they, you know, been more informed about that. There's assisted living, there's respite.
There's respite. We could have put in 24-hour home care for less than $2,000 a day. I mean, it just... You know, so in this circumstance, in talking with the son and about what was going on with dad, you know, prior to the hospitalization, dad had some memory loss, but not a lot, had a fall and, you know, went to the hospital, I guess ended up having pneumonia. So they treated that. But in the process of being in the hospital for a little bit, was becoming more and more disoriented and confused, which often happens, particularly folks that have some level of memory loss, dementia, Alzheimer's.
But isn't that just attributable to the
change
infection and being in the hospital?
Change of environment, you know, all of those kinds of things.
And sometimes you can get back to your baseline when you do leave the hospital.
Yep. Right? And that often happens. Sometimes it does cause a bit of a change, but if you can reorient someone back to an environment that they're familiar with, it's very helpful. But one of the things is, in talking to him, I just said, I really don't feel from what you're telling me that he needs nursing home. Nursing home is skilled level of care, and that's what a lot of people don't understand. You know, you should need something that requires a nurse, you know, all hours of the day. And the big thing becomes, well, they're a fall risk. Well, they can fall anywhere. We're not going to prevent them from a fall. I think we might have a call.
So we have one more caller. We'll try and take you in before the break. We have John from Colony.
Hi, John.
Morning.
Morning.
My wife and I had when the kids were young, we had a will made up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, we're both in our 40s now.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, do we need a new will, or should we do a trust?
So there's a lot of factors that go into that. So when you make a will when your kids are young, you probably have things like guardians in there, someone to manage the money for them. And now that your kids are older, you don't need that to be in place. So that's probably a reason to update your will. In fact, your kids may even be able to be executors for you. And then the factors of deciding whether you need a trust, that's kind of something we look at your big picture, your assets, whether you have long-term care insurance, you know, how are you close to retirement? And we kind of look at all of that and see, is this kind of a right time to do a trust for you? So, yes, really good questions, a lot of things to think about. I would suggest, you know, sitting down with one of us and kind of going through that in a free consultation where we can kind of go through the options with you.
Okay. Well, my wife and I are both retired.
Okay.
And a few years back, we did a home equity loan. So we still owe money on the house. But would that keep us from doing a trust?
Yeah, so that's a great question, and I don't want to give you a short answer. I'll give you an answer after the break, okay? because there's lots of factors that go into houses and trusts and mortgages, okay?
Okay.
All right. So we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And good morning, I'm J. Marie Schaefer.
And good morning, I'm Kim Hance.
And welcome to the second half of the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we answer your questions about estate planning, elder law, Medicaid planning, elderly people driving, and all kinds of other interesting things.
Right.
So you can call in if you have questions. Our number is 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. And I do want to get back to a question that we had before the break. And the question was, if you have a house that has a home equity loan on it, can you put that house into a trust? And the answer is yes, you can. Because the way that the trust is set up, it's a type of trust where it wouldn't cause any issues with the mortgage or the home equity line. So you, of course, would keep paying that as you normally are. You would just be retitling the house into the name of the trust. Now, on the other hand, once you put your house into a trust a couple years down the road, if you do want to borrow against it, that's where you can run into some issues. There are some banks will lend to you, some won't. So that's something, a time where you should give us a call and say, this is what I'm thinking of doing, and we can kind of walk you through what the options are. So we were also talking, Kim and I, about discharge planning in hospitals and how important it is to kind of get yourself educated about what the options are out there. And sometimes a discharge planner is telling you nursing home, and that isn't always the case. There may be lesser care.
Levels, right.
Lesser levels. That was the word I was searching for.
Right.
Thank you. Lesser levels of care, such as memory care, assisted livings, or even home care.
Right.
And so you were telling us a little bit about how you were assessing that.
Right. And, you know, so in this gentleman's particular circumstance, he had the capacity that kind of checks off all the list for, and in our area, we have many options. We have assisted living, we have memory care specific assisted living, and then we have this other thing that's called enhanced. And we have that both in assisted regular assisted living and in memory care. And really what enhanced is, it's just one step down from nursing home. And by one step down, I mean they don't need catheter care. They don't have a trach. They don't have a ventilator. But all of those other high need types of assistance, incontinence, transferring, you know, ambulating, those kinds of things, an enhanced assisted living can handle. And to my point in working with this family is, number one, he is private pay. So the nursing home is going to be charging him $15,300 a month, which is standard, and that's okay. That's not evil nursing home, right?
That's the going rate, basically, for nursing homes.
Right, but when we were looking at the enhanced level of assisted living, which is the highest level of memory care, they were going to be charging him about $7,900 a month. So we're talking almost exactly half.
Almost half. So that's a huge
savings. And he would be getting the same level of care in a much more enriched environment. I mean, nursing homes are practically hospitals, right? They're very institutional. They're very sterile. And I'm not at all saying that nursing homes are bad. They certainly
serve a purpose.
They do. Absolutely. But
if you can be in an assisted living where you maybe have your own room with some nice furniture that doesn't look so institutional, I mean, that's a huge difference.
The activities programs are more enriched because this was memory care specific. They're really skilled in dealing with issues that surround memory issues, whether it's somebody that might have sundowners, whether somebody might have some kind of behavioral triggers. You know, they're really skilled at managing medications correctly. I mean, what we end up finding a lot is somebody has a hospitalization that has dementia, they become disoriented, they could become a quote-unquote behavior issue or behavior problem because they don't understand what's going on. And hospital settings, not restful, it's very chaotic. And for somebody who's confused, it can really send them down the rabbit hole, so to speak, even a little further, because every time they try to get up, people are rushing in at them, you know, saying, you can't get up, you have to sit down. It's very restrictive, right? And the last thing we need to do with folks with a dementia issue is restrict them, because that causes sort of that more of that agitation and anxiety to surface.
And then the thing to remember is that is an option, but in this particular case, there wasn't time to do that. But you can go to a nursing home, and then from a nursing home, you can transfer to an assisted living.
Absolutely.
So you shouldn't think that because your parent or grandparent or whoever was transferred to a nursing home, that that's it.
Right.
That they can actually go out to a different setting. They may even be able to come home with care.
Correct.
And we could set up 24-hour care. So you do have a lot of options. You just have to, you know, get educated about what they are and see what is available to you and know the pricing.
Right.
And that's wonderful to save half of the cost.
Absolutely. And you know, just being aware that as an individual, you have the option of pushing back a little bit and saying, and I think that's what happens a lot too, people get very scared that, I can't make this choice. I can't make this decision. It's going to be AMA, and then they're never going to see my parent again. And it's No, you're exercising your right to explore what other alternatives are out there. And really the purpose is to have a safe discharge plan. And sometimes that gets, the creativity takes a little longer, and hospital discharge planners don't have that time. I mean, they're working against the clock.
As I often say, they're not working individually for you. So they're working for the hospital. So if we use someone like Kim, she is working just for you to see what's in your best interest.
Right. And I'm not afraid to push back.
That's right. Oh, no. Kim's no shy person when it comes to talking. So give us a call if you have any questions. Our number is 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. If you have any questions about estates, trusts, Medicaid, home care, all of that. So since we're kind of on the subject of discharge planning, I wanted to ask you to speak about another issue that comes up. And I know David had a client this week where this gentleman's wife was in the hospital and she needed to go to a nursing home. But the question came up about whether she had been admitted to the hospital or whether she was on observation status.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about what that means for her.
Right. So unfortunately, what happens in a lot of these circumstances now because of the new, not so new anymore, but the Medicaid or Medicare regulations is there has to be a medical need for someone to be admitted to the hospital. And by medical need, I mean treatment of some sort for some type of condition that you come in. So
pneumonia, example.
Pneumonia, urinary tract infection. But we're even finding now that folks with urinary tract infections are being treated and released. They're really not being admitted because a urinary tract infection can be managed if it's caught soon enough.
Right.
But the concern becomes if it doesn't get caught or a secondary infection because of a urinary tract infection doesn't get caught, right? So it's really important to be an advocate. And the first thing you need to ask if somebody's taken to the hospital is, are they being admitted? Because even if they're put in a room somewhere in the hospital, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're being admitted to treat the condition.
And then we'll get to in a minute what being what being admitted means in terms of financially paying for the rehab.
Correct.
So first we have a call, Dave in Clifton Park.
Hi, Dave.
Good morning.
How are you?
Roth IRAs. I heard something this week that they are now the counties. Certain counties are going after Roth IRAs. What is Herzog's position on Roth IRAs?
Well, it's not so much our position. As you mentioned, it does go county by county. Mm-hmm. So let's explain what that means. When you are applying for Medicaid, you can only have a certain amount of assets in your name. And there are certain assets that are exempt that Medicaid is not going to count. So IRAs, it's very clear cut. There's an exception in the law for IRAs. They're exempt. Medicaid will not count them towards your assets. So Roth IRAs are... were not around when those regulations were written, right? They're newer. And so they're a different type of creature, you know, that money is put in after tax versus pre-tax. That kind of really only matters for tax purposes. But for Medicaid purposes, it's open to interpretation. So some counties are saying, oh, IRAs includes all our IRAs, even Roth IRAs. Some counties are saying, no, Roth IRAs are separate and they're exempt. I mean, they're not exempt. We are going to count them. So that is it's a tricky thing to handle. So you can go about it. You know, we could look at the county and see whether that's one that treats it one way or another. If you wanted to be particularly aggressive, you could say, well, we're not going to count the Roth IRA, and then you may have to challenge that, you know, through a fair hearing or through an appeal. So there's, you know, lots of different ways to handle that.
Does it make sense to put the Roth IRA in the trust?
You actually can't put that in the trust because by taking, that would change the tax status of the trust. Of the IRA, by changing the owner on that. The Roth IRA has to keep an individual as an owner.
Thank you so much.
Okay, sure. Thank you. It's always hard when Medicaid law isn't really applied uniformly across the state.
Right.
It's, you know, you think it should be uniform across the state. There's another discrepancy across counties in terms of when you have an IRA. The IRS says you have to take out certain distributions when you reach age 70 and a half based on a certain table.
Right.
Some counties, when they get look at that, they ask you to use a different table, which means your distributions are suddenly higher.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Of course. And that means, of course, more money gets paid to the nursing home. So that's another discrepancy in the counties. And, you know, it shouldn't really have to be like, which county do I live in to get the better treatment? And the Elder Law Bar is trying to work to get a uniform answer from the counties across the state.
Right. I was recently at a New York State update on some of the home and community-based services, and for the last 5 years, there's been this huge push for managed long-term care, and now all of a sudden, the state is starting to put the brakes on that, so it's becoming more and more challenging to actually get people covered and get the hours that they need. And another element that is happening is some of the managed long-term care companies aren't paying their vendors. And so some of the vendors are now saying, discharging their patients, saying, we haven't been paid by the insurance company and we can't continue to provide services. And so, you know, it's becoming a little bit of a scary time, but at the same time, you know, being able to plan ahead so that you know exactly what the opportunities are out there. Recently, in a lot of the home care cases that I'm working with, we're, you know, securing 12, you know, 16. One of my last ones was 22 hours a day of home care. But it's knowing the right program to utilize.
And that's fantastic to get that many hours of care covered
absolutely.
By Medicaid at home. So if you have any questions, please give us a call, 518-476-590, or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. And we were just talking a little bit about discharge planning. So if you're just on observation status, what does that mean when you are discharged to a nursing home for rehab?
Generally, it means that your rehab time that would normally be covered under Medicare would not be covered, because in most circumstances, you're supposed to have a three-day hospitalization in order to hospital admission, in order for Medicare to cover that rehab. Take a little break because we have David from Kingston on the line. Hi, David.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just recently listening to your previous caller concerning Roth IRAs, and my question is, what county agency would an individual contact to find out the information regarding whether or not the county pursues the IRA or not?
So Medicaid is administered by the Department of Social Services for each county.
Okay.
And that's where you apply, so that's where you would look to see how they would treat that.
Okay, so that's Department of Social Services.
Right, the Department of Social Services in your county.
Okay.
They handle all of the Medicaid applications.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thanks for calling.
But on that note, I will tell you that a lot of the county Department of Social Services don't really know what it is that they pursue. Because we have had circumstances where we've been in a county and it's worker dependent, depending on which worker you're dealing with and how they look at things.
That's true.
So we end up having to push back a little bit. So we have John from Clifton Park. Hi, John.
Yes. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you?
Good. Excellent. Follow-up question on your Roth IRA. If I were to put my Roth IRA in a payout status, if I'm over 72 and a half, does that deal with the issue of being able to touch it?
It helps the issue because now you can make an argument that it is now more similar to your traditional IRA. And because you're taking distributions, it should be treated that way. The only caveat to that is the distributions that you take are now considered part of your income. And then your income does get paid to the nursing home. But that is certainly one way to handle that. I'm not going to say it's foolproof, but it really bolsters your argument that it's like an IRA.
Okay.
And in the circumstance of receiving home care services, if you're accessing Medicaid for home care, we have the ability to shelter that income through what we call a community-pooled supplemental needs trust, which we utilize in a lot of our circumstances because a lot of our folks qualify from an asset perception, or but then from an income, we need to work on, because Medicaid says you can only keep
$879 a month.
As you say, the numbers are new for 2019.
Right.
So anything above and beyond that $879, we're able to shelter through a community pool trust. So that's a big thing, too. Most people say, oh, I make too much money, even with my income, to access Medicaid. And for community, which most people want to be at home, it's a great way that we utilize those services for the community-based services.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're okay. Welcome.
Thanks for calling. Lots of great questions today. Everyone's wide awake on this really bit of a cold morning, which is good.
Decided not to go out today and listen to the radio instead.
Oh, it's a day to stay in. That's right. So before we go back to what we were talking about, just want to remind you of our February seminars that are coming up, where you can get a full hour to an hour and a half of information and questions answered, and also get a little coffee and cookies.
Right.
We have the first seminar coming up on Tuesday, February 12th at 2 o'clock at the Glenn Sanders Mansion, on Wednesday, February 13th at 10 o'clock at the Holiday Inn Express in the East Greenbush, at 2 o'clock on February 13th at the Hampton Inn in Clifton Park, and on Valentine's Day, February 14th at 2 o'clock at the Queensberry Hotel in Glens Falls.
Nice.
And if you want to sign up to come to one of these seminars, you can call the office at 518-465-7581 and ask to speak to Stacy, or you can go on to our website at herzoglaw.com and you can sign up for the seminars right on the website.
Very good. So to get back to that hospitalization thing again, one of the things that I was mentioning is that generally you have to have that 3-day inpatient hospitalization or admission. But more and more of the Medicare managed plans are exempting that need for the 3-day admission. So a lot of what I'm telling people, there are about 5 or 6 plans now that will waive that and will allow you to go to rehab even if you haven't had a 3-day inpatient admission. And that's really, really super important.
That's really helpful, because before that, it just, if you were observation, it meant you had to pay privately for your rehab.
Correct.
So you're going there and you're immediately paying that $400 or so dollars a day for the rehab. And the reason we're making you aware of that is if you're family members in the hospital, you need to be an advocate and go to the admissions office and say this person should be admitted, you know,
right,
versus observation, to try and get them into that status before they go to a rehab.
Right, because generally speaking, anytime they're providing some level of treatment, it should be an admission, because they are being medically treated for a condition. So it should be an admission and not observation.
That's right. That's right. So good information to know. The other thing that came up with this client this week, so not only were they dealing with the admission observation status, is that they had a Medicaid trust they had done more than 5 years ago. So 5 years is the look back period. And their house was in the trust, so the house is exempt, but they had not followed through and put any of their financial assets into the trust. And that is something that comes up frequently. So if you have a trust, it's important to fund it, because now this was at a point in time where they're in crisis mode and trying to get eligible for Medicaid, and they did not have everything put into the trust.
Right. And we have run into some circumstances where they've gone through the process of setting up a trust, but then didn't put anything in it. And families have been very surprised, because they've been told, oh, yes, there's a trust and things like that. Or it's in my will. And the will really doesn't do anything to protect your assets or property or anything like that. So it's really super important to understand the differences between those things.
And that's kind of just follow-up planning. So that's why we suggest you look at your estate plan every couple of years. You know, maybe you came in, you did a trust, and now it's been 3-4 years. And you come back in to meet with us, and maybe that's when we would have uncovered something like that. Or it may even be you weren't ready to put your financial assets in a couple of years ago, and now you're a little bit older, you have some money saved aside that you say, I could put that money in the trust because I don't need it so much.
Right. I was just meeting with a family this past week because they had come to one of our seminars. We were talking about long-term care insurance and the need to really understand what your policy is. They had bought it 20-plus years ago, and they just got they're upping their premium, right, the bad letter. And so one of the things that we were talking about is, you know, having to look at their situation. They're in their 80s now, and do they really need all of this coverage, and can they cut away? But through that, when we were talking, one of the things is they have a revocable trust. Mm. And so I said, you know, it really probably is time for you to come back in and talk, because you did this when you were in your 60s.
Right.
Circumstances are much different now. And so you really may want to come have a conversation about changing that, or at least understand what implications, pros and cons are versus, you know, for keeping the revocable trust versus the irrevocable trust, and how that all ties into your plan and your legacy planning for your children, you know, sort of thing. So definitely very important to continue to check in.
Absolutely. And while we were talking about trust, I just want to address one caller who called in. All of our clients who do trust with us, they eagerly look forward to the tax letters that we send out. And so every January, February, we send out to our clients who have created trust a tax package letter, and that explains how to do the tax returns for the trusts. And the good news is they are ready, and they were being mailed out end of last week, beginning of this week. We have to wait for the IRS in New York State to release their tax forms before we can do that. But they both did just do that this past week. This is the time of year where we also get a lot of calls about taxes, so certainly feel free to call in 518-465-7581 if you have a question about how to handle taxes if you set up a trust, and Stacy can set up a call with you and we can answer that for you. So back to the long-term care insurance, that letter that we were talking about,
right,
is, as you may or may not know, premiums have been going up over the past several years. So insurance companies have been sending out letters to policyholders saying your premium is going up and you have an option. If you don't want to pay the increase, we can reduce your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a time where it is probably good to talk with someone and look over your total plan. You know, see, do you need that full amount of coverage? Could you reduce it? Sometimes we even do a irrevocable trust in with a long-term care insurance policy.
Right.
You may take a lower daily benefit amount and use a trust to kind of protect your other assets. So there are lots of different options to do without having to be, you know.
Lots of strategies, lots of ways to look at. And one of the things that was important with this couple is they really did want to have a legacy for their children. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I said to them is, even though you have an unlimited long-term care plan, which is not very common these days anymore.
I saw one too recently, and it's not that common. So
right.
That's a policy that doesn't have an end point.
Right.
Normally policies are 3 years, 4 years, 5 years.
Right.
A long time ago, 15, 20 years ago, there were policies that gave you long-term care insurance for your
unlimited,
life.
Right?
Unlimited.
Right. And that was one of the things I said to him is like, well, you're 82, your wife is 84. Would it make sense to maybe reduce your plan to 5 years? Do an irrevocable trust? Go ahead and fund it so that you know those things are protected. You know, so I said, it's probably time to come back in and see Harry, because that's Harry is who he originally worked with, and
right,
kind of talk about what some of those strategies are, because you may not have to keep an unlimited term on your policy anymore.
And I love the fact that they're in their 80s and we're still talking about a five-year plan.
I know.
Which so many clients we have both seen into their late 90s, 100. So 80 is not too late to do a plan.
No, I consider 80 to be young now.
I do too.
You know, when I first started this venture many years ago, I 70 was kind of old, but now I'm like 70. Mm. Gosh, that's like really young. And
70 is very young and vibrant.
Yes, yes. So,
we talked to plenty of clients in their 80s who are still doing their planning, and that's not too late to do that.
Right. And of course, as we get older as well, right?
Well, yeah, as I get older, the old age keeps moving up, you know.
It's not that old at all. So again, how about seminars that we have coming up, Jaymarie?
Sure. Seminars February 12th at 2:00 at the Glenn Sanders Mansion, February 13th at 10:00 at the Holiday Inn Express in the East Greenbush, February 13th at 2:00 at the Hampton Inn in Clifton Park, and February 14th at 2 o'clock at the Queensbury Hotel, and that is Valentine's Day. So take your spouse out, do a seminar, learn about wills, and then take your spouse out for a lovely Valentine's Day.
Right, there you go. That's right. And these were particular wills versus trusts, so kind of talking a lot about what we're talking about today. And then the other thing, too, that I don't think a lot of people know about us in the firm is we love to go out and do education wherever, you know, so it's not just the seminars. So if you belong to a senior organization of some sort, a senior center, you know, you have a group that likes to get together on a regular basis, we really enjoy coming and talking to folks about the different options about aging and being proactive. And
those aren't always on our webpage, but we are frequently out at different, you know, community centers,
assisted living, senior independent living communities, because we do feel like it's really important for people to get the information. So if you belong to an organization or live in a senior community and you think this would be something of interest, let us know, because we'd love to put your place on our calendar.
Sure. And just as basic as getting a healthcare proxy and a power of attorney done. And those are so important. And I've had, I get a lot of the guardianship cases. And people who don't do this advanced planning and then get injured. I had one just this past week where now that person can't sign new papers. And the only way to handle things is to do a guardianship.
Which is so tough.
It's so tough to have to do that, because it's a lot of time in court. It's a lot of money. There's a lot of attorneys involved. Even when it's uncontested and when it's very simple.
Right.
It is. So, you know, it's so simple to get your healthcare proxy and power of attorney done. And that kind of lets you put in place the people you want to take care of you when that time does come down the road.
Right. And we often say that everybody over the age of 18 should have a healthcare proxy and power of attorney.
Thank you for spending this hour with us, and look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.